Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now, the man who finally decided to show up again to work, Carter Rodriguez. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, you know, some of us leave the pod to go on, multi-week vacations to Cabo. Some of us go to actually do their day jobs, you know.
Cancun, so
if we're comparing dedication to the grind and to the pod, I'm blowing you out of the water 10 times out of 10.
See, I wanted to be kind of rested, relaxed, so that the content on the pod is better than ever. And you're just working yourself to the bone. So you're just tired, grumpy, and argumentative on
you're
the pod.
You're not wrong.
But we are bringing in someone that's looking rested, fresh. Dave DeFore of The Athletic. You may know him from such podcasts as The Daily Ding, as well as Nerder, She Wrote. Dave, welcome back. It's good to have you, man. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. I love that you noticed how well rested I am.
Right before we went live, you were talking about how you're in good shape. And you know what? You look like you're in good shape. It's hard to tell because you got the modesty hoodie on right now. But you know what? You're looking good, man.
Hey, what's funny is I wore this hoodie in Milwaukee and this guy was like, man, you look even more lean with that hoodie on. And he's right. Like, I kind of look like I'm training to fight, which I am, in case anybody was wondering and trying to sneak up on me on the street. I mean, well, I'm all.
Oh, I thought you were embarking on an MMA career all of a sudden.
No, I'm 40, and taking shots to the head after 40 is just not a good idea. I have been actually
didn't go so well for CM Punk either, so that does make sense.
Yeah, I am training like I have a fight, but I don't have a fight, which is different.
Which I would argue is better because fighting is not good for you.
No, fighting is awful, and I don't recommend it, especially just in real life. But I don't know. It's also like training to fight without a fight. I don't know. It's weird. I'm not against it, but
you're a strange man with strange intentions, Dave.
Maybe we can scrap on All-Star Weekend or something along those lines. That could be a lot of fun.
I've been living alone since the middle of June, and apparently this is what it is. Like, I essentially went into like a jail mentality. I work out, I watch basketball. And by the way, I'm skipping All-Star, and I hate to do this to you guys.
Oh boy,
you are unbelievable.
Doing it live on the podcast too. That
I know.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, I mean, number one, there's a pandemic, and you know, who knows where we're going to be with that. Hopefully,
don't you dare be responsible.
Well, number two, like, my wife has been gone for a long time, and she's just going to be home right before All-Star. So I'm probably skipping unless I can convince her to go with me to Cleveland.
You know what?
Yeah, get the Cavs. Just have the Cavs fly me out, you know.
We have that kind of power.
Yeah, we really do. But you know what? It's great to see you looking so good, man. You're looking better since the last time we talked with you, and so are the Cleveland Cavaliers. Last time we had you on, I think you were higher than consensus when it came to the Cavs. And
especially outside of this market.
I'm always higher than consensus.
Yeah, it's very true.
About the Cavs, yeah.
But you've been high on this core for a while, but obviously the additions of Evan Mobley this year, adding Ricky Rubio, the growth we've seen from Darius Garland, the fact that they're doing this without Colin Sexton, with him being out of the lineup, I'd like to get your appraisal, because I haven't heard too much of it on the Athletic feeds, of just kind of your impressions of the Cavs as we're now over a quarter of the way through the season.
I said this a couple times in the last few weeks, and in particular after they beat the Mavericks, and I saw a lot of Dallas fans feeling like they were down bad because they lost to the Cavaliers.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, the Cavaliers are good. I don't know what people want me to, they're good. Like, this is a good basketball team. Look at how they play defense. And Darius Garland, who we were all worried was never going to be able to defend his position. Hey, looks pretty good when you put some good defenders around him and behind him. I think that they are ahead of schedule. You could say that Jared Allen is probably the biggest contributor to that and the growth that he's shown, not just as a rim protector, because we know that, but look at what he's doing passing the ball. The reads that he's making out of the short roll is opening up other stuff. He's got some great chemistry with him and Mobley. Actually, Mobley, to a certain degree, sometimes relies on Jared Allen a little bit too much, gets a little too pass happy down there. But okay. Other than that, I think that that's a good problem to have, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'd rather a guy be a little too pass happy than hesitant to pass or hesitant period,
or not see him at all
or never see him. Yeah. Yeah. Turnovers for a rookie, man. It's like, okay, if they're trying to make stuff happen, that's a good thing. But yeah, I think Jared Allen has been instrumental. Obviously Darius Garland taking a leap or a jump or a hop or whatever we want to call this. It's building on what he's already done. The flashes that you guys, I thought, were kind of ahead of the game on, especially as a passer.
I'll let Justin victory lap on that one. I was a little slower on the uptake.
Yeah, but one of us compared him to DJ Augustine, and it's like, you know what? If he's just DJ Augustine, that's not the worst outcome.
You dick.
I mean, look, I'm you can't compare him to Ja Morant yet, but you can definitely see a trajectory to that sort of player with what he's able to do, especially because he can shoot and pass as well as he can. I think that things are going to open up even more. And Mobley, guy looks like a Hall of fucking Famer, man. Like, I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like, they drafted Kevin Garnett.
Mm-hmm. The next ticket, baby.
It's like Kevin Garnett's body and athleticism with like Tim Duncan's demeanor.
He's the thing that people pretend Anthony Davis is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you said this because I have long maybe undervalued AD's like mind and way to like his feel for the game compared to like everyone else. I'm always like, I feel like he's a good defender because he's like the biggest freak ever, not because he's so ahead of the curve in terms of his feel and the way he like reads the offense. And that's what I see with Mobley, is like he's snuffing out actions before they begin a lot of the time.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I love when he puts the ball on the ground offensively too, right? Like he's got this, it's not quite, he doesn't have the Kevin Durant type of handle, but he's pretty quick with it. And that's scary. It's his growth over the next three seasons is going to be fascinating to watch. Like if he's a top 15 player in 3 years, it wouldn't shock me.
That's kind of the fun thing with the Cavs. And honestly, like I'm struggling to keep everything in perspective because you don't see a team with a starting lineup that has an average age under 22 be a top five defensive team. You don't see a team like that play with the consistency that the Cavs had. Braden Todd had pointed this out on Twitter, but the Cavs, Jazz, and Warriors are the only teams in the NBA that haven't lost a game by 15 or more this season. Like, that is remarkable. You would expect off nights. I'm still
more than
expecting 15. What's that?
More than 15. They lost to the Lakers by 15.
Okay. You know what? I was crediting him for the tweet. Now I can take this fact on my own. And
tweet it out now. Tweet it out now. You've won.
There you go. I'll tweet out 16 or more and just rub it in his face. But like I'm still expecting like those off nights to come at some point, and certainly we've seen nights where the offense has struggled and you're missing a shot creator like a Colin Sexton. I think the Bucks is a great example of that. You have the Cavs playing in their third city and on their third night or third game in the third city on the fourth night, which is just crazy. Like that is by definition a schedule loss. But you know what? They took some punches from Milwaukee. They hung around. Darius Garland obviously bothered by Drew Holiday and the length of the rest of the Bucks. But you know, the fact that they're hanging around with all these teams makes me kind of like question what approach this team should take, because it seems like they're further ahead in the development curve than I would have expected given their age.
I mean, that's sort of the million-dollar question for them, right? Because they've got pieces. I mean, Ricky Rubio probably has suitors. I bet the Warriors would love to have Ricky Rubio, you know, or a team like
that. Taken from my cold, dead hands.
You know, it's funny that every single fan base feels the same way about Ricky Rubio. And the truth is, he does what he's doing for Cleveland every single place that he's been. He gives you the boost. He did it in Oklahoma City. He did it in Phoenix. He did it. I mean, he's done it everywhere. And it's, you can see where the market is for him. I hope they don't move him though. Cause
yeah,
I do think that what they're doing is important to the growth of their young guys, and establishing a culture of winning instead of tanking is important. And I don't want to go on a whole thing where it's like, well, you know, look at what the Thunder are doing. The Thunder are doing what they have to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. They didn't get a chance to draft Evan Mobley. They didn't have Darius Garland, right? They're trying to find a Mobley, but with Cleveland, you've got Mobley, you've got Garland.
And you have all, and you have all these other like highly drafted pieces that have that are already around. And then you also have some vets like Kevin Love off the bench is quite the luxury for a team like this.
And especially engaged in playing the way that he has. And you know, you hope that maybe he's a piece that you can move because of that contract, but I doubt that's going to happen. I hope they just roll it. Let's just roll the ball out there. See what happens. If you get an undeniable deal, you have to take it because you do have to think about your timeline and all that stuff. But when you look at the way that they've sort of handled themselves the last few years, and I bring this up every single time I'm on the show, when LeBron leaves a team, he leaves the cupboard completely bare. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Lakers are dealing with that right now. This is why bending over backwards for LeBron only makes sense if you're ready to win a title, like now. Right. There is no, oh crap, we hope that we can just be good forever, because you're not, because when LeBron leaves, everything's gone. You've traded it all away for his pet, you know, teammates or whatever it is that he wants. You're giving it up, and you do that for LeBron. This is like the best player or second best player of all time. So you do mm-hmm. that. But when this, you know, when Kobe Altman took over, they had nothing. And it was a lot of sneaking in on second round, you know, with pick up a second round pick here for a bad contract, pick up this bad deal, and maybe you get a second rounder attached. And then they've drafted, I think, pretty well. The Colin Sexton pick, I liked it at the time. I think that it's panned out pretty well.
Pretty good for eighth overall.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that guy, again, depending on how you feel about him, I mean, that's a guy who I think can score 20 points a game for the rest of his career, no matter what role he's in, whether it's starting or off the bench. Mm-hmm. And I've said for a long time, I think his defense being the limiter on, you know, what you can do with him, what kind of team he can be on. And obviously you get some size concerns with pairing him up with Darius Garland, but even that pick, man, it's been a great pick. So they've done a really good job. And I think you just sort of have to trust their process at this point and see, you know, allow them the grace to make the decision on a guy like Ricky Rubio or whoever else may be available. Now, if we're splitting hairs, the Lowry Markkanen thing still is weird, but it's working out somehow. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. JB Bickerstaff might be a much better coach than anybody will give him credit for.
I think that's definitely the case.
Yeah, and you made that point for our season preview podcast before last year that you felt that JB Bickerstaff is a good coach. Like, hey,
you don't hang around this long unless you're pretty good, right? You at least got to be a good dude. Yeah. And that's half the battle, right?
That is half the battle. Like getting buy-in from players is so important, right? Like you can have assistants that help out with other things, and it's so hard to figure out exactly how things are delegated amongst the coaching staff, but getting buy-in, especially from young players, like you mentioned Sexton's defense kind of being kind of one of the X factors for how he fits into teams. It was better this year, right? Like he was playing off ball, he was playing defense, like he was doing what it takes to win. And I think it's unfortunate that he got hurt at the time he did, because I don't think he was getting enough credit for the growth that he showed and how that was fitting in with everybody else. But the fact that all of these guys that, hey, Sexton's in a contract year, but he's okay playing off the ball a little more and doing the little things, trying to make winning plays. The fact that a team this young is this prepared, I think a lot of that credit has to go to the coach.
I'll also say, there's great vibes on this team, and it's a Ricky Rubio team, so you're never going to have bad vibes. but the vibes start at the top, and you know, JB Bickerstaff, again, he's been the interim coach so many different places. He's always on a staff somewhere. This guy is always employed, and that tells you so much about a dude, way more than whatever his coaching win-loss record is, because that takes away the context of whatever team he's coaching. The fact that this guy is never unemployed, and when he is, it's not for very long. People are clamoring to have him around. That tells me all I need to know about JB Bickerstaff. And the proof, we're seeing it. Mm-hmm. This is a better team than it was last year. And last year, it was better when he took over. Yeah. And I think that if they continue on this path, I mean, there's no reason to think that this team isn't going to make the playoffs. I mean, it definitely the play in, but I think they've got a good shot at top six with this.
The funny thing is
we do too, my friend.
Yeah. Like, and for me, like, you know what, making the play in, if they made the 10 seed, I at the start of the year, I would have considered that a win, but you know, expectations move. They shift even with the Colin Sexton injury. And as crazy as it is to say, given the strength of the schedule that they face, like, they feel like a better team than their record right now. And you hope that they can start banking some of these wins, because everything's uncertain. You never know if someone's going to get hurt, if someone's going to be out of the lineup for 2 weeks with COVID. There's so many unknowns that you can't really kind of count your chickens before they're hatched. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of reason for optimism when it comes to this team. And the fact that they're hanging around these great teams, even when they're missing Evan Mobley, even when they missed Jared Allen, when Darius Garland was out, they beat the Hawks. Like, they really seem to be more than the sum of their parts, which is something that Carter, I know, has been clamoring for forever, that was the main thing that he wanted to see here.
Yeah, and that's really what I wanted to ask you, Dave, is because last year this was a team that was a young core that you liked. You liked the direction they were going. And they were kind of lousy at actually winning games. Now they're not so lousy at winning games. What do you think the biggest difference is? What has changed to make them more than the sum of their parts? Because it's not just Evan Mobley, right. Laurie Markkanen. Well, like, what do you think it is?
I'm part of it's Evan Mobley.
Yeah, it's a big part. He helps.
Because you got Mobley and Allen now, right? Mm-hmm. So you have two. This was the thing about the Lakers defense a couple years ago in the bubble that was so special, was you had two next level backline protect guys, right? So you had LeBron, you had Anthony Davis, basically like two great white sharks. And now you've got Mobley and you've got Jared Allen able to do that as well. And those guys, they don't get killed on perimeter switches. So they're a very rare like twin tower duo. This is like the modern twin towers. So that helps. I think Garland's leap has helped a lot, and you can watch how the offense has gotten better for everyone else as the scouting reports have caught up on Garland, and they're trying now, they're throwing more stuff at him. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, he's raising his level of play, the 10 points or whatever he scored, against the Bucks the other night, notwithstanding, I think if you watched, just say you just watched the back-to-back that they just had between Utah and Milwaukee, you'd come away feeling like, oh man, wow, in 2 years, that Darius Garland and Mobley, those guys are going to be running the East, right? Like, you can see that pick and roll and the way that Mobley pops and then is able to attack off the dribble. I mean, there's a lot of dynamism in those two guys. And then obviously Jared Allen, who I could just talk, we could do a whole podcast about Jared Allen.
He's so great.
But I think that the difference is that they were young and dumb and talented, and now they're young, not as dumb, and still talented, right? Like, so the talent has been there and they've shown flashes. They're getting smarter. They're still young, and we're still seeing some of that youth pop up, right?
Yeah. There are so many stretches every game where JB is clearly like, F it. Kevin, Ricky, get in there.
Yeah.
Come get these kids.
Jetty, come in there. Yeah.
Again, this is such a luxury for a team in the position that Cleveland's in, where, you know, other teams in their shoes are still tanking.
Yeah.
I mean, it just...
Ready to win, right? Like, and it's not necessarily tanking. It's, hey, we're going to give a lot of our minutes to our younger players for development. Right. And naturally, that's going to lead to losses, which for the people that were skeptical about the Cavs this year, that was a logical conclusion, right? Like, they took a gamble that, like you said, you don't really understand the Nance for Laurie trade. But a big part of that gamble was Evan Mobley's going to be able to replicate what Larry Nance did. And that's a really big ask of a rookie, right? And Laurie is just going to give us some offensive juice because we needed that. That's a big gamble. Darius Garland, like, especially after Sexton went down, all of a sudden he's seeing the best defender on at least the best guard defender on a night-to-night basis. How is he going to adjust? Well, most of the time he's been playing even better, right? Like, he's rising to that occasion. Jared Allen has made improvements in the margins and really improved as a player. Like, teams this young just don't win like at this rate. It's really like, if you're looking for comparables, it's hard not to like get incredibly optimistic and be like, oh, the Warriors did this, the Thunder did this. Like that's really the only examples that we have
that
in recent years.
Got ready faster than we were expecting. And I do think you were onto something, Dave, by saying it is kind of Evan Mobley, because if this team was lacking anything the last couple of years, it was an identity. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, the Laurie at the three thing is a little silly, you know, or Dean Wade at the three is a little silly, it feels a little wild. It's like I felt like when JB stuck with Dean Wade at the three when Laurie was out, it was almost saying like, no, this is who we are. And this is kind of what we believe in that makes us successful. So as much as Darius is, you know, it has been amazing on the offensive end of the ball, I do think this team found its identity in the Mobley Allen pairing of, hey, our back line, our four and our five, we can cover for anyone. We can cover for Sexland. We can cover for Lauri Markkanen at the three.
And I think
used to tank defenses.
Yeah, and I think when Dean was starting, it was more about, I think that they can cover for Dean at the small forward position, and I think he can do a good enough job because I want to preserve Ricky Rubio and Jeddy Osmond, right?
Like,
I want to preserve those two as my bench unit, and I want to keep the rotations as normal as possible. So I'm going to bring this guy that wasn't in the rotation into the starting lineup to keep everything else normal so that these guys have structure, because structure has been a big part of Jeddy Osmond's turnaround this season.
Yeah. The Mobley thing is it's undeniable to me.
Yeah, and it's not just Mobley. It's the net product of pairing Mobley with Allen that just clicks everything into place for this team and makes them feel so much more dynamic.
Well, the entire question coming into the season after drafting Mobley was, can Mobley play with Allen, right? Because Allen just signed that contract, and you know, like, the idea is that this guy, it has to be your defensive five or whatever. Can he do well? We found out that Evan Mobley, I don't know what Evan Mobley can't do, to be honest with you. That's where I'm at. I want to see what he can't do, because certainly there are things where his youth and lack of experience show up, but you know, he just jumps up and you showed the highlight here, jumps up and just, let me just snag this ball out of the air. that I was a little bit late getting to. I mean, he just does incredible stuff, and he's got incredible feel, and he hasn't played 20 games.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. Like,
did your opinion of the Cavs roster construction and the viability of that pair change after seeing the change in the rules this season? Like, what you're allowed to do defensively? Because I feel like because you're allowed to be more physical, because now it's really important to have screen setters, to have guys to free up guys on the perimeter. Did your opinion evolve at all, or were you kind of still in kind of wait and see mode, or like, you know what, this could work out even before seeing that?
Well, they didn't really have any amazing grifters, right? So you knew that it wasn't necessarily going to hurt their offense.
Right.
And I think that defense across the board has gotten a bump. So if you have good defenders who maybe fouled a lot, Jaren Jackson Jr. comes to mind for me, because his foul rate has been atrocious the entire time he's been in the pros, and he's got getting it under control this season. And what do you know? He's turned it around and people are saying, oh shit, Jaren Jackson Jr. pretty damn good. I think that younger players who are more apt to foul anyway, right? They're
that's
dumber.
An interesting point.
Right?
Yeah.
Younger players are probably going to look like slightly better defenders, just because they are able to get into guys a little bit more, be a little bit more handsy, be a little bit more physical. But the truth is, they're still calling real fouls. Like, James Harden's shooting a ton of free throws because he is fantastic at actually baiting real fouls.
Yeah.
They've just cut out all the other crap. Mm-hmm. The stuff where, like, the head snapping back, you know, like, that's gone. It's gone. It's gone from the game. All of this flopping that used to just kill me. It's just embarrassing. It's like, I'm watching these guys flip and flop all over the court. If I wanted to do this, I could watch soccer. Okay. and that's all gone. And I think that stuff does help young guys, because number one, they're not getting tied up trying to grift themselves. So they're not out there trying to draw, you know, bullshit offensive fouls. They're not trying to draw their own bullshit foul calls on the defense. So they're not as tied up in the parts of the game that are clerical parts of the game. Mm. And they're actually out there playing basketball and being able to use their bodies. And I think that that for a young player in the league, the less you have to worry about, the better. I think that that might be part of it.
I think that's a really, really interesting point. Like, especially the fact that guys no longer have to learn what they can't do in the pros. Like, if they were physical in college and all of a sudden I'm not allowed to do any of the stuff I was doing defensively in college because they're just calling that as a foul, that would certainly help. Even a player like Evan Mobley, who, I mean, his verticality and his ability to not foul was one of the big selling features in college, and that's translated incredibly well. One thing I'm curious about, though, when you look at the Cavs right now, and this was a bit of a discussion point against the Bucks because Isaac Okoro had a rough game there. He didn't play particularly well against the Jazz, kind of on and off with how he's
had a rough
played
year.
Offense. Yeah,
he's had a rough year on the offensive side.
He's had a rough year on the offensive end. And with the Cavs, or at least kind of their core three here ahead of schedule, I've seen some people wondering, you know what, should there be some sort of win now moves? Like, should they start trying to accelerate where they are in the process and go along with those three versus someone like Isaac Okoro, who's on a much more kind of traditional timeline, development timeline that you would see with an NBA player, right? Like, still 20 years old, he's still figuring things out, he's defense first, so there's always a little less willingness to have some tolerance with that because it's not as apparent as someone that contributes on the offensive end. And right now, the starting lineup with Okoro is working really well, despite him not playing well offensively. Do you think that the Cavs should look for some sort of move to maybe talk to Indiana and find a guy like a Lamb or Justin Holiday, something like that, to reduce some of Okoro's minutes and have a more ready player? Or do you think these developmental reps and seeing if he can work his way through it are probably the best way to go about it?
I mean, I think that you're not in a rush, right? And my approach to this would be the same way, because the worst thing you want to do is send him to Indiana and then all of a sudden he's a player.
Oh, I'm not talking about trade Okoro.
Second rounder or two. Dave.
Yeah, okay. Okay, all right, because I guess I misheard you.
Justin Holiday would not be my recommendation for an Okoro trade. Your wide eyes are the correct response.
Okay, all right.
We're trying to bring in some extra wing help to kind of bolster that part of the team, which is, you know, by I think everyone's estimation, the weakest part of the team, mm-hmm. and saying, hey, we got a chance to make some noise in the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. Do we need one more wing we can really rely on, even if that means that we got to give that wing 20, 23 minutes a night, which really cuts into Isaac's time?
Well, I think if you could pick up somebody who is a veteran, who's expiring, maybe, that's a sort of safe
holiday.
Well, I mean, what about Terrence Ross? Is he expiring?
He's still got another year. Here's the problem with guys like Ross is the Cavs are, you know, they did the second rounder game. You know, well, hey, we'll take on JaVale McGee. Hey, we'll take on Torian Prince. But here's the thing. They ran out of those guys. They actually got rid of all of them and turned them into the team we see today that we all really love. So they're at this point now where they can't – they don't really have a ton of matching salary anymore.
It's, you know, Rubio, Jetty, and Love.
Like, Jetty Osmond, I think, was the guy. I think Jetty was the guy we were like, okay, he'll be the matching salary because he had the nightmare year last year. Jetty's been better than Terrence Ross this year. You know, you don't want to trade Jetty for a guy like Terrence Ross anymore. So it's like, really, they have nothing better to work with than $1.5 million, $2 million deals. So getting up to that 10, 12 million mark is going to be a real challenge for Kobe Altman. I'll never put it against him, but I would be surprised to see them be able to make that.
There's also just not a lot of guys out there.
That's the thing. Everyone's like, oh, just trade for a 3-and-D wing. Like, there isn't a store that just provides.
Do you like Eric Gordon? Do you like Eric Gordon? And he's not a 3-and-D guy, right? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, who can even be gotten? There's just not a lot of guys.
Yeah, I mean, and for the Cavs, luckily, they're at this point where really, like, you can just say, hey, we just need a reliable grown-up body. Like a Justin Holiday, like
on this Justin Holiday.
Well, I'm saying like Garrett Temple, that's like those kind of guys.
Like if you can get Danny Green,
Journeyman wings is what I'm talking about.
If we get Danny Green, Dave's going to have no problem selling Cleveland All-Star Weekend.
I mean, look, I think every team, it's a wing league, right? Every single team could probably say we could use an extra guy. I mean, the Lakers could just use one guy. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, like, yeah, I do agree with that. But I think, again, the patient approach is actually playing Okoro and letting him be a little bad. And I
that's where I'm leaning, because you want to find a balance, right? Like, you want to have options that, okay, if he's having a tough night, we have someone that we can go to that, hey, we'll get him in, we'll kind of steady the ship. But at the same time, you don't want him looking over his shoulder every time he misses a shot thinking, oh, is so-and-so coming in for me? Like, you don't want him being afraid to make mistakes, because guys that are afraid to make mistakes end up like Ben Simmons, where they're just not making a lot of progress in their game because they're afraid to miss a shot, right?
So way more of those guys in the league than people will recognize, because we make fun of Ben Simmons all the time and like point him out. But there are a lot of these, defensive first wings and guards that just don't shoot and are hesitant shooters. And it just doesn't seem as bad because they don't touch the ball as much.
Yeah.
But those guys are also out there. And the last thing you want to do is add one of them onto your roster and, or create one internally. So yeah, you're right. You have to be really careful with the way that you treat Okoro. I mean, does he seem like, when you guys watch him, does he seem like he gets down?
I think he's struggles? Having, I think he's having a hard time right now. I mean, there have been a few times where he's hit a three and kind of given the finally vibes, you know? And I think I do feel for him, but to the point like that we're talking about, there is a middle ground here. And now that the team is getting a little healthier, like, and Jetty is playing so well, like, Isaac played 18 minutes against Milwaukee, you know, like, JB didn't have to play.
It's not like he's getting
35.
A mandatory 40 minutes, right? Like, that's not the situation. And I'm actually interested. I think once Dean Wade is back and healthy, like, I think you have an opportunity to maybe place him some minutes at the three so that you can kind of move Jetty over.
They were doing fine
the
with
two.
Him earlier.
Yeah, you can move Jetty over to the two and kind of eat some minutes there.
Ricky eats a lot of minutes at the 1/2, or Darius at the 1/2, because they love that dual point guard lineup. So those guys get at least 10 minutes a game together, it feels.
And I also feel like the struggles of Okoro are a lot more apparent when you play a Milwaukee or a Utah. Like, as much as I love to make Rudy Gobert jokes, he was phenomenal against the Cavs. Like, he was really, 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 really good. And that's a really, really, really good team. Like, a raw offensive player is going to struggle at times against teams with length that know what they're doing defensively, that are full of adults. But as the schedule lightens up, because it is going to lighten up at some point, I know it's been absurd for the Cavs, and they're about to enter another 3 games, 3 flights, and 4 nights stretch after this one day off. But it does lighten up at some point, and I think Okoro is going to have opportunities to play himself back into kind of form, because he's struggling more offensively than I think he did in his rookie year. And to your point, Dave, like, I think it's important that he's still taking shots, right? Like, he's still willing to even take a step back three every now and then. He's taking open threes. When he really starts struggling, I think he just kind of goes kamikaze to the rim sometimes, and Giannis basically ended him with one block last night.
I kind of thought Okoro was going to be able to show more early on off the dribble.
I think we were both hoping for that too.
Yeah, and he hasn't. I do think that the defensive upside is something. And
well, I mean, what's the D rating? I know, Justin, you check it every morning with your coffee. What's the D rating of him with Mobley and Allen? Like,
you know what? Give me a moment here. You guys filibuster while I look that up.
25 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah, honestly, David, I think last time we checked, it was like 87. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's pretty good.
Like, you know, like, he does, you know, he does fill a role for this team. And like, I don't know, like, in your mind, like, what is enough? What is enough for a player like that to be able to stick on the floor offensively? Because, like, we know he is a great defensive player, especially on the smaller guards. Once you get to like 6'8", 6'9", it gets a little tougher for him. But on these, you know, really shifty point guards, I'm not sure there's anyone better. That the Cavs have even close to him. What do you need to see from him on offense to say, okay, he's good? Give him all the minutes.
that's the tricky part, right? Like the first guy that I think of is like Dorian Finney-Smith. Dorian Finney-Smith is like a bench tweener guy. Great. Like he's fine as a fifth starter, but really he's better off to me if you bring him off the bench. Now Okoro should be better than that, right? I think that you need something north of that production wise. Yeah,
better pedigree,
right?
Better athleticism.
I mean, I'd like to see him this year. Like, I mean, why can't this guy be a 12 to 15 point a game scorer on moderate volume from three? Like he's going to get a ton of spot ups around those bigs and Garland, you know,
on a diet of wide open threes. I mean, he's got to get to like 35%, and he's not even close right now.
That's where I'm at. If he could be league average on 5 or 6 attempts a game, all of a sudden now you got a damn offense.
Yeah.
Because of him. Right. And so he needs to be able to stick league average 5 to 6 threes a game and play his defense. Right. And then, you know, you get the ancillary stuff in transition. You create opportunities for yourself. And allow him, he's got to be able to be on the court to be able to be the defensive playmaker that we all know he can be. But he's got to be able to stick on the offensive end. And for him, his role is for sure going to be the release valve three-point guy.
Because he's not going to get
Tucker.
Because they're playing this big, he's not going to get a lot of those kind of backdoor cuts for dunks. They're just not there the way they were last year.
Yeah, so I mean, PJ Tucker, he needs to be like non-hesitant PJ Tucker, but also he needs to shoot those above the break threes as well, because he is a guard or wing or whatever, and that's just part of your job, you know, in that role. And so,
and you hope it's part. You don't hope, but you kind of look at the fact that he suffered from a hamstring injury that knocked him out for a good stretch of time, and you say, okay, maybe he's still not right yet, but you know. Right now, like it's hard to imagine. Like if the defense falters at all, it's really hard to justify him out there. He's averaging 7.3 points a game on 36% from the field and 22% from three. Mm-hmm. It's just not enough right now. And you know, I do think but I think they're really making the right play here in terms of on nights where it's like, okay, Utah is completely ignoring him and it's choking out the offense. Jetty, you're getting way more minutes. Yep. Ricky, you're getting way more minutes. And that, I think that's the way they're going to have to play it while he kind of works his way back. Because I don't think he's a 22% three-point shooter. I mean, unless he's really got the yips, I don't think he's – I mean, that is like, you know, that is a whole new level of bad, and I just don't expect it to sustain.
Well, and the six-game stretch prior to this back-to-back he was shooting 39% from three on three attempts a night. Like, that was great. And then, you know, he has a couple of rough nights, and people forget that. And, you know, that's not abnormal for a rookie. Or not a rookie, but
I guess, you know what? Too.
It's still been like a calendar year of him being in the NBA, right? And, like, a thing I always point to is Sexton year two, before he had his kind of sophomore leap, that first 30 games, he was shooting like 11% from three there after his first couple games. Like I remember on the podcast, we were talking about the lineup data of Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. together versus Sexton. And that's when a lot of kind of those conversations about the viability of that pairing started. And then Sexton, you know, once the new year came, started shooting great from three and really had a breakout year. So I personally, because I they're not competing for a championship this season, because they probably have enough in the tank while playing him to make the playoffs and maybe even avoid the play-in, give him these reps. If he doesn't make the most of it, and after a year or two, you're like, okay, this guy's kind of like a Matisse Thybulle for us. Like, you know what? You can look at other options there, but I just don't see the downside of really giving him these developmental reps, because if it means you lose against Milwaukee or Utah, you know, like, that's not the worst thing in the world. Also, I mean, you guys were wondering what the defensive rating is. 91.9 in 161 minutes.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty filthy.
Now, what's the trade package for LeBron going to look like? Because they're
Stop it.
I will come.
Well, LeBron's going to want to play with Evan Mobley, right? Yeah. He wants to play with stars, and he doesn't have any right now. So, no,
you know,
Evan Mobley and Darius Garland with LeBron.
You know what? The last time that he went to a young core, he traded half of them away. I kind of like these guys, Dave. You know,
this young core is actually winning.
Kevin Love getting left out of the letter this time would be amazing.
Good point, Carter. I mean, once again, if we're going to trade for a small
forward, he doesn't have to teach Dion Waiters how to be a winner this time.
That is fair. That is fair. I just don't have a lot of interest in that. You know, if down the line he wants to do the Wade retirement year or something like that, I'm okay with that. But this is too much fun. This is too much fun.
Dave, Justin loves LeBron, but he doesn't like LeBron. That's the real lesson here.
I understand it. Listen, I completely understand. I mean, how does it feel? You guys, I mean, you know, you're watching the Lakers because you can't help it, right? Like, yeah, if you're not watching their games.
Right? And they're on TV every night.
Yeah. Except for when they get flexed for the Wizards.
That's true.
Right? Like, how cool is that?
I will say, it is pretty funny that in his first year in LA, they got a higher draft pick than the Cavs. That was a little infuriating. But in year four, the Cavs being a better team than him in LA is a lot of fun. You know what? I'm not competitive about it.
I'm actually just grumpy with him. I'm like, what are you doing, man? You've had such a great career. Are you really going to burn down the last 3 years of it on Russell Westbrook? Come on, brother.
Yeah, because unless Cleveland's going to trade for Russell Westbrook.
Listen, you know what, man. I feel like we could go on this for a while. I do want to bring it back to one more thing. I really do want to pick your brain on, Dave, because there is a bit of a narrative forming with Garland making the leap, and particularly after Sexton went out with this meniscus injury. It's okay. Like, was Sexton holding him back? Which I've always said, like, if you look at the 15-game sample he played in April of last year, where he was averaging 21-7, pretty close to the numbers he's averaging now, not against the best defensive player on the team. And we can also point out the fact that numbers were inflated last year. That was pretty damn clear. It's obvious that he's made a leap. But while he was doing that, Sexton was playing really, really well. And Sexton had made changes to his game this season to play off ball. He wasn't stopping the ball at all. He was playing defense, all these things. Do you think that there's some merit to Sexton being out, kind of contributing to this Garland leap beyond just kind of getting more reps? And if you do feel that way,
a witness.
Yeah, okay. I am known for that. Let's start it there. I'll ask a follow-up.
What do you think about this thing? Let me tell you all the reasons. If you think that, you're wrong.
Carter's been podcasting with me for too long. He knows all my tricks. I'm not graceful with it either.
You know, I think that there's certainly some merit to there's only one basketball.
Yeah. Right?
You get a guy out of the way. You're putting a lesser player around him. So Garland's got to take on more of the responsibility. I'm not sure what his usage is, but I'm positive that it's gone up since Colin Sexton has been out. Because now he is.
Don't have to look it up. Can confirm.
Yeah. He is 100% the top playmaker on the court. Whereas there's an argument to be made that Colin Sexton and his improvement as a passer and clearly his threat as a scorer opened up stuff for his teammates. And he was getting better at recognizing that as well. This is another way that Colin Sexton's gotten better. But yeah, I mean, of course, you know, it's one less guy who is similarly talented that's out there on the court. So the deck shuffles and you bring in a less talented player to be your fifth guy on your starting five. And so Garland's picking up more of the slack, doing more stuff and just getting more opportunities.
Yeah.
As guys around him are actually getting better and they're improving their chemistry as they go, which Colin Sexton hasn't been able to be a part of. So I think it is that Colin Sexton being out has contributed. But also, I think Garland is just clearly better than he was even at the end of last season. I mean, this is a different guy. He looks faster. I think the injuries that he had the first, you know, little while he was in the league clearly hampered him.
Yeah.
Clearly hampered him because he is a water bug. I mean, watching him get into the high pick and roll, I don't know who can guard him if he gets out in space. So, a little bit of both, I would say. I think it's a little bit of Garland getting better and a little bit of
despite me leading the witness, I was actually hoping you were going to say that, because my follow-up question is, with that being the case, do you think that there's a way to reintegrate Sexton into the lineup without kind of hampering what Garland's doing?
Yeah, you're playing 4D chess over there, buddy.
He really is. I think the number one thing is, and he's not going to be back this season. Right.
No.
So first thing to realize is this may not be a problem. Right. He may not be back at all.
Don't say.
I mean, like I'm just saying. I mean, he'll be back in the league. I'm just saying, he may not be back in Cleveland, right?
Oh, like,
you talk about a piece. You talk about a piece that could be something that they could move they felt like, hey, we want to take a stab at maybe getting out of the first round of the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be a guy who's a little bit interesting. And of course, at this point, other teams would be buying a little bit lower on him than they would have.
I think if that were to happen, it's a sign and trade. In the offseason.
Oh, yeah.
But either way, your point is well taken. He might not be here next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if he comes back, I mean, I don't see any reason why it can't work. None at all. I mean, imagine him as being able to be the secondary pick and roll guy with Mobley and Allen out there just setting screens like crazy up top, mm-hmm. right? Or a split cut. They don't run a ton of that, but if he
really showed a lot as a backdoor cutter.
Yeah.
Early in the season. Do.
And Garland being better is going to make it easier on Colin Sexton when he comes back, because now you've got two guards to deal with.
And that's the thing. Like, they've always been like, when one plays well, they both play well.
You guys
like,
ever watch the Clippers?
Especially when Garland plays sometimes. Well, it opened up things for him.
All right. The Clippers, man, the Clippers are a good example of this. And you know, they have like four or five guys at any given moment that can just get a bucket off the dribble.
Yeah.
So the more of those guys you have out there, the more dangerous you are, the more flexible you can be. And I think that adding Colin Sexton to a better Darius Garland, that just Sexland's improved.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you think that just by virtue of Colin being a high volume player, that he somehow like that triggers Darius's worst instincts of passivity, then it's really not a Colin Sexton problem, is it?
Exactly.
You know, like, I think that if I'm the coaching staff and if I see that when Colin comes back, I'm like, no, you don't get to do that anymore.
And we've already seen it.
You don't get to be the setup guy.
And that's something he can work through, right? Like, because to start the season, he was really, really passive when he was playing with Ricky Rubio, because he's just kind of standing around off ball, and he worked through that, and he's become a much better player without the ball. He's learning how to relocate. The lineup of Garland, Sexton, Mobley, and Allen played 120 minutes together this year, and they had a defensive rating of 100. Like, that's a decent enough sample size. It's not like it was tanking it. In theory, if you were going to make a backcourt like Sexland work, having Mobley and Allen is exactly what you would want for something like that, which is why I'm fine with giving Okoro all these developmental reps, because I know, all right, if it doesn't work out, if he doesn't take steps this season, you do have another option in Colin Sexton. You can bring him back. You have full control of him as a restricted free agent. So for me, it's not really a concern. I don't think it's an indictment on Sexton that Garland has stepped up with him being out, because you want guys to step up, right? Like, when you have six guys under 25 years old that you're invested in, that you're hoping to develop, you want all of them to hit. You want to have good problems. Like, I understand kind of the knee-jerk reaction to say, okay, this guy's gone, they all play well. Like, they were playing well before he got hurt too, right? Like, they were in the midst of blowing out the Knicks when Sexton went down. Like, they've been playing well all season, and I think that's something that people lose sight of.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I mean, especially the Mobley and Allen point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be like if you asked a novice, hey, I've got these two short guards that play up top. What do you think we ought to do defensively?
Two big dudes.
Two big guys.
Yeah.
And if they can run around, even better. Right? I mean, so...
And by the way, we've seen this concept proved recently when Toronto was playing Lowry and Van Vliet. Like,
want a more recent example? Utah's backcourt is shorter than the Cavs. Like, and they only have one of those really good big dudes that plays defense. they start a 6'7" power forward, right?
Now, this is an interesting thing that you're bringing up is see if Gobert had a partner like Mobley.
Oh my God.
The Utah Jazz are the best team in basketball right now. And I mean that I don't say that lightly. Like, they would be the
Mobley
best team
takes
in the
a
league.
Lot of current teams and would make them among the best teams in basketball, I mean, in one fell swoop.
To have Jared Allen, who everyone considers, I mean, he's a top five, top six defensive center. And then add Mobley to that. It's crazy.
Because it affects the way both of them switch, by the way.
Yeah. Like,
Rudy still has – Rudy, when he has to switch out, they have lost their line of defense.
I mm-hmm. Now, here's what I will say about Rudy. Rudy can switch out. Yeah. Okay. It's not.
He'd rather not.
This is like the Garland Sexton thing with Rudy. No. Rudy wants to switch out. Through various reporting, I understand that Rudy wants to switch, and you see him more of that this year. Difference is they don't have the other bodies. Yeah. They just don't have it. And the Cavs have two guys, and you can, like, if you've got two plus defenders and Okoro, who I think could wind up being a guy who's like a real defensive playmaker. You've got a good solid base there, and you can add anything to that.
And it just affects the way they switch, though, right? Like, like Jared Allen does not play conservative when he switches. He tries to get up on guys and challenge them. He's not just waiting for the step back to kill him.
He's got that 7-foot alien behind him that's just coming to snatch the ball out of the air, right? Like, they're a Leviathan, right? Mm-hmm. They are a Hydra. Just those two guys, and it's just something to watch, man. They're fun, and so yeah, I just think that a lot of defense. It's funny, if you have good good point of attack defenders, you can cover up for a lot of warts. I mean, if you look at what Chicago's been doing, and if you've got great guys on the back line, you can cover up for.
They're totally like bizarro world teams in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But it's a team sport, man. Like, and this season has been so great because I think it's. The overwhelming theme of the season is that it's a team sport.
Yeah. 21 teams are at least three games away from 500 or better.
Look at the Memphis Grizzlies. I think they're a great example because even last year when they were also missing Jaren Jackson Jr., they kept winning without Ja Morant. And like, if you go to sports talk radio or debate shows or whatever, they'll say, okay, that means Ja Morant's not good. No, the talent level around the league is just up. And that's a really good Memphis team. That's a good, deep team that's really, really well coached. And I think you're just seeing more and more depth around the league, more teams that are just like the baseline of competence is so high right now. And I think it's in a really healthy spot. And
there's not a lot of bums, right? Like, is there a bum in the league? I mean, I don't want to make the Plumlee joke that I make every single time, but there's just no bums in the NBA anymore.
Here's the way I could spin it. If I was doing a podcast, I don't think there is a team that you could assign me to that I couldn't spin some sort of optimism for. I couldn't sell some sort of young player there, because like even the Orlando Magic, like Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony, I still kind of believe in Markelle Fultz. Wendell Carter Jr. is playing really well. Mo Bamba's showing some stuff. They still don't have Jonathan Isaac back. Like Detroit, Kate Cunningham's playing fantastic recently. Like Houston Rockets, Kevin Porter Jr.
just Jalen Kate Green. For Detroit. Yeah. I love that. Only thing in Detroit we're talking about is Kate.
You know what? I was going to name a whole bunch of guys that I would have named in the offseason, but I understand Sadiq Bey is not playing as well.
Hayes is not worth
it. That's a tough one. You know what? But still, you get a Cade Cunningham, you can figure some stuff out. Mm-hmm. The only one I can't. The other team I can't sell multiple players for is the Dallas Mavericks, but that's another story.
Yeesh.
But anyway, my point is just like there is just so much talent. And so maybe they will find a wing guy, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, these guys keep popping up. That's the funny thing is as much as I say there's nobody out there, then you look at, like, I don't know, the Clippers. Do the Clippers have a two-way guy that Cleveland wants, because he probably can play in the rotation for an NBA team if you're judging by the track record from the Clippers for the last few years, right?
Terrence Mann's and these dudes, Amir Coffey, and it's just like,
where do you find these guys? And so, like, now that's the next step, I think, for Cleveland and for their scouting department and for the front office is to discover some talent, right? Like, I loved and I know that it didn't work out for various personality reasons. But KPJ pickup when they picked him up. And I still think that guy, if he ever is able to pull it together professionally, right, is going to be a good player.
From a talent evaluation standpoint, like, absolutely. I think that's a hit that late in the draft. Honestly, like, I think Dylan Windler would have worked out if he didn't have all those injuries, which, unfortunately, I mean, you don't miss a game in college and you miss like your first year and a half. And now he's playing in the G League, which I think is really good. I like teams using the G League to give guys that aren't getting minutes. Mm-hmm. I think the Toronto Raptors have done a great job of that. And both Kevin Pangos and Dylan Windler playing for the Charge tonight. So that's nice to see. The Cavs are in an interesting spot. Like, I'm personally, I'm fine kind of riding it out. If there is a guy available for like a second round pick that you can maybe get a little more depth, I'm not opposed to that, especially the nature of the league. Like, you have guys that miss time. You need to have options there. But I mean, even if you look at this coming off season, like, you will still have Colin Sexton that you can make a decision on bringing him back. That's going to be an infusion of talent, assuming he can get healthy in his rehab and whatnot. You have your first round pick, which is probably going to be like, what, 14 to 22. You have the Houston Rockets second round pick, which is probably going to be a really high second round pick. Like, you're going to be able to maybe find a Chris Duarte or someone along those lines, right, that can make an impact. Like, there's a lot of avenues for a team that still owns all their picks, that has a good young core. Like, as much as I understand the inclination to want to start pushing the chips in the middle of the table and make some win now moves, I'm fine going with the development and seeing what you have. And who knows, maybe at the trade deadline, you've seen enough of guys and you feel confidence to make a move, or someone becomes available. But I'm not making a move just to make a move.
I will make a pitch for enjoying this while it lasts.
That's where I'm at, man. I'm not really that interested in move. Like, every time a fake trade gets posted where I see a rotation player that's on the team right now as a suggested trade, I'm like, I just like my team.
Here's my question for you guys, because I'm not a fan of any teams. I don't know. I haven't been a fan of any teams in a really long time, for real. Like, period.
I can detect a hint of sadness in that. Like, I know there are benefits, but I can feel a little bit of sadness.
I don't know. It works for me. Let's just put it that way. I'm not big on groups, and so it works for me to not really, you know, I pick and choose. I get to root for whoever's fun and good. But for you guys, is it fun to root for a team that's not supposed to be this good?
100%.
There you go.
We've said this several times this year, that this is we keep telling fans, even if we make like the conference finals next year, this will be the most fun year.
Yeah.
Like, this is the year where every win is found money. It just is, you know, even against, you know, the Detroits of the world, it feels so good to just, you know, to earn a win. Whereas, and then when you do beat, you know, the Washingtons, the Dallases, the Miamis of the world by like 25 points, or, you know, you're up 30, it's like, holy crap. It just feels so good, because you're not coming in with this expectation that you're just going to kick ass, you know? So it's the best. It's the best time to be a fan, other than when you win the championship. It's the only other time.
So a few years from now, you've got two of the five best players in the league. In Mobley,
we'll be miserable. Garland. Don't worry.
You didn't have to specify it. Any combination of the three, if you had them there, I was fine with it.
So you got two of the best five players in the league, pushing all the chips in the table, getting these journeymen who want to play. You know, get your LeBron on a 1 year deal, coming in for another title. You're just gonna hate it. Is that what you're telling me, Carter?
Yeah, we're gonna be. I'm telling you right now, we're gonna be a little miserable. How I know that? Every fan base in the NBA, every fan base in sports. I live in Columbus, Ohio, my friend. Buckeye fans are some of the most miserable people you'll ever meet, because they didn't beat Rutgers by 47.
Well, they didn't win every year, right?
Yeah. So, like, if that's once your bar becomes win every game, it's really easy to be nonplussed, and that's just not where we are right now. So yeah, I genuinely mean that this is the most fun we'll ever have with this iteration of the team. So like, I'm soaking in every win. I'm not in a hurry to trade any of these rotation guys or get off Kevin Love's contract, even if it happens and that's the right choice. I'm not in a hurry to do it, because I like this team right now. And if that's not the point of being a fan, I don't know what is. Yeah.
Nobody believes us. In us is the most fun place you can be in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody believes in, especially if it's not like something like I'm trying to get you to believe in me and give me money. Right. Like,
Dave, how many games have the Cavs been favored on? Gun to your head.
I don't know. Oh, five.
Two.
Wow.
They have played two teams below 500 at this point.
They don't even have to fake the nobody believes in us thing, because it's for real.
It's quite legitimate that nobody believes in them.
Personally, that's the position I like to be in, right? Like, I love a polished turd. And not that this Cavs team is a turd. They're really good. But coming into the season, we thought that they were going to be. And they're shining bright.
And that's why you love coming on this podcast.
I actually have to ask you this before we go. And I know we're getting near the end of our hour, but like that joke you made does make me wonder what you think about this team. Do you think that this is a team, oh, tryhards, the Knicks of last year, where you go, okay, well, they have an identity. They work really hard, but we're not sure what they're going to amount to long term. Or do you see a long term future where this team is contending for the East?
Well, I think you've got two guys. Garland and Mobley, right? And Mobley is going to be a star, I think. And I think Garland, if he's not a star, he's going to be something pretty close to that, right? Whatever that mm-hmm. level of player is. I don't know if it's Kemba Walker a few years ago or whatever, but like he's going to at least hit Kemba Walker in Charlotte level. I feel pretty confident in that. The stuff that he's showing, the skill that he's showing. And Mobley, I mean, I don't know if I could possibly be higher on Mobley than I am.
Mobley is the reason. If we're really calling a spade, if this team's going to, like,
but you've got two of those guys now though. Right. And then you've the contract situation is what it is. You've signed Jared Allen. So, you know, that your defense for the next couple of seasons is going to be pretty solid, right? Like you're not going to have worse than the 10th best defense. I can say that safely. Now that I've seen Mobley defending in the NBA, this is a top 10 defensive lock with Jared Allen and with Mobley back there, no matter what. So when you know you've got that, okay, now what's our other goal? Top 10, top 15 offense. As long as you have both of those things, you're in the playoffs in the East usually.
Yeah.
So now you're able to build. And I think that Garland will improve. And obviously we all expect Mobley to improve. And there's no reason to think that two or three years from now, this isn't a team that's really pushing for like that 4-5 spot in the East. And you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, who knows who's going to get,
and they're pushing for that now.
right. Yeah. And there's new guys coming in. But I do think that as some of these other guys, you know, like how long is Brooklyn going to actually be all that good? Two seasons from now, who knows what that team looks like? So I don't see any reason to sort of deviate from the path unless, again, you get some kind of an overwhelming offer and deal. But the bigger thing is just enjoy the ride because they're really fun.
Yeah, they are so, so very fun. And I love watching. It's nice to have a team that's easy to root for.
And also the consistency on a night-to-night basis. Yeah. Like, we didn't even get that during the, like, second LeBron tenure, right? Like, this is probably the most, like, consistent
that
fun.
That was the most mailed-in regular season. Right. That was the start of the cynical basketball stuff that really, like,
man, I bought the Kyrie flip the switch colorway. Like I fully embraced the flip the switch because it drove everybody insane. Friend of the podcast, Matt Moore, he couldn't stand it because he's like, this team is so bad defensively. There's no way they're going to actually be good. And then postseason comes around, boom, they flip
every year.
This is the most fun that I've had since like 2009, 2010 Cavs, because every single time I turn on the TV, I know it's probably going to be a close game. Even if they have a really bad offensive night and it's a schedule loss, their defense is going to keep them in this game. And hey, maybe we can steal it like they did against Toronto. Like, that's a really, 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 really fun spot to be in. And the other thing I love is seeing the reactions of the teams they play against. Like, Tony Jones was like, hey, this was a really quality win for the Utah Jazz. That, like, if you showed me that tweet at the start of the year that the Jazz, like, plugged in Jazz beat writer would be like, yeah, beating the Cavs is a legitimate win for the Jazz. Like, this is a good measuring stick game. Ben Thompson, one of my favorite follows on Twitter, tweeted after the Cavs played the Bucks, he's like, this feels like Cavs Bucks a few years ago when the Bucks were the young up-and-coming team, and you're like, okay, there's something here with Giannis. You can see there's something here with Mobley. Garland, 21. Jared Allen, 23. Isaac Okoro, 20. Colin Sexton, 22. Like, this is a really, really, really interesting spot to be in. And I'm just embracing it because you never know what the future holds, man. Like, you just never know.
Well, can they get J.J. Hickson back?
not the forward.
Only if they're lucky, Dave.
Not the Ford that my dreams.
Not the guy you need. No, I was just thinking, who's a guy about Lowry Markkanen size to play the wing?
Brandon Ingram.
Dave, I would. You don't know the things this podcast would do for Brandon Ingram on this
team. I'd degrade myself. You know what? And that's the thing.
Like, I don't hate that. I'm not a big fake trade guy. I'm actually awful at fake trades because I never think about them. I don't know how you'd put that together. And
who knows what's
happening in New Orleans. But man, Brandon Ingram is such a cool player.
Those are the only types of players that are underrated,
by the way. And yeah, Brandon Ingram is cool as hell.
I mean, just the slender man front court.
He's cool as hell.
Ingram, Mobley, Allen. Come on, Dave.
That's so cool.
That is so much height and so little weight. And you know what? Like, I will rescind my hope that you just kind of stand pat. If someone like Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown,
go get a
young wing at the three becomes available, then yeah. But those players actually have to hit the market, and they don't for a reason, right? So realistically, I'm perfectly fine kind of running this out. And you know what? If there's a development, there's a development. I have no interest in Caris LeVert. That's another guy that the money's impossible to make it work. He can't shoot. He never stays healthy. He's not playing defense this year. That's not one of those guys, if anyone's wondering my stance on that. But yeah, that would be the type of scenario where I'd be like, okay, you should probably get aggressive to see if this is even possible.
Yeah. What about Ben Simmons? Are you guys in on Ben Simmons?
No.
Are you telling me you don't want a guy who not only doesn't play well on the court with others, but may not play?
Well, here's the thing about the Cavs that I really like is I'm sure everyone on this team loves basketball. I'll leave it there.
It is a helpful thing. And you know what? I was actually open to a Ben Simmons move before the season because the Cavs, I love the young core. And I'm like, they just need a guy that can be the guy. And you have that with Evan Mobley. So you no longer need to take a swing on a disgruntled guy that can maybe be the guy if things turn around, if he buys into your situation and whatnot. You don't have to take a Ben Simmons risk anymore because you've got a good young core. You've got a guy that you feel like can be the face of the franchise. No, I'm good. I'm good.
It's a big risk. Yeah, I'm rooting for the Cavs to just keep it how it is, be good, shock the world, win a first round playoff series. To be honest with you, I'd love to see them be the Hawks of this season. And you know, if anybody's going to capture some luck and, you know, have some good fortune on their side, I really would like to see it be the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And you know what?
It's a fun story, man.
And if that happens, I will just remind people that last year I was saying the Cavs, this year could be the Hawks. We could do that. We're probably going to get a little more production from our rookie because Onyeka Okongwu is pretty banged up and it was not as strong of a rookie class. You know what? I might do a bit of a victory lap. I have been known to do the thing every now and then. Dave, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We lose track of time with you, man. I could honestly do this for about 3 hours, but I really, really do appreciate you having you coming on with us. Do you have anything you want to plug before I wrap this thing up?
You know, check out the Athletic NBA show, the new home of the Daily Ding. So you can catch me multiple times a day. Sometimes I know it's very nice for listeners, or not nice. One of the two. You're either skipping two shows or you're skipping one on any given day. So definitely check those out. But all my stuff's at the Athletic as usual. Yeah.
And make sure you guys are checking out, Nerder She Wrote on the Athletic NBA show, but don't miss that. I enjoy that every single week.
Only if you like high level basketball conversation by experts. Only if you like that kind of thing. I don't know.
You know,
I'm a little over it, but you know, I don't know.
You'll get a laugh or two. It's you might get some niche topics. You may get some weirdos. You know, it's a good hang. Absolutely. But Dave, thank you so much, and thank you to our listeners. For those tuning in live on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, make sure you leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.